The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, May 7th. Let's try that again. Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, May 7th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And the reason I got messed up is because I was trying to say, this marks my 8-year anniversary in marijuana activism. I started at the Global Marijuana March on May 7th, 2005. That's where I was trying to go with that. But hey, we made it here anyway. Glad you could be here to join us. We got all sorts of news and information to bring to you on today's show. At half past, we've got a special unplanned Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment because I got two great new videos from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition detailing their mission and showing some of their accomplishments. I wanted to share those with you, so we'll bring those to you at half past. At 45 past the hour, I'm going to have time for a little radical rant today. I've been inspired because there's three new posts up at learnaboutsam.com. That's right, the guys from Project Sam, Kevin Sabet, they got all sorts of opinions, and he went off on the California Supreme Court decision banning allowing dispensary bans, President Obama saying no to legalizing drugs, and research out of Temple University on THC synthetics to combat HIV/AIDS. He's got an opinion on all three of those things. I'm going to bring the facts and the science to the debate to counter some of his opinions. Also on today's show, speaking of countering opinions, we're going to go behind the headlines. Most interesting headline today, Matthew Perry, the actor that you may remember from Friends or from The West Wing. He's currently on a sitcom called Go On. He was honored by Gil Kerlikowske in the Office of National Drug Control Policy the other day for his commitment and advocacy to the Drug Court program. Well, once again, I'm going to bring some facts and data to the debate so Matthew Perry can get an idea just what it is his celebrity is promoting in this country. Here's a hint. Discrimination against pot smokers. Also on today's show, we've got some Daily Toker tunes for you. Electronic dance music. We've got Bacon Crispy, Bacon Dan. He's going to be calling in a little bit later to introduce this song from DJ Schmoly called Insomnia. What's this called? Insomnia Rhythm Satisfaction. Sounds interesting. But before we get to all that, we've got our 420 radio news. We'll bring you a lot of headlines from Colorado, a lot of things going in their legislature, plus update from LA on that dispensary ban ruling from the Supreme Court, and decrim goes into effect in St. Louis at the top of June. So we'll tell you all about that when we come back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Colorado legislature gives final okay to marijuana driving limit, from the Denver Post. The torturous journey through the Colorado legislature of a proposal to set a stoned driving limit ended Tuesday when the state Senate gave final approval to the plan. The latest iteration of the proposal, House Bill 1325, now goes to Governor John Hickenlooper, who has said he supports the plan. The bill sets a limit of active THC, the psychoactive chemical in marijuana, that drivers can have in their blood before juries can presume they were too high to drive. The bill does not change anything about how police identify, stop, question, or test stoned drivers, except in extreme circumstances, drivers would have to give consent to have their blood drawn, though they could lose their licenses if they refuse a request for a blood test. The bill's impact is in the courtroom, where it creates a permissive inference, essentially a nudge, to juries that people with more than 5 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood were stoned. That is a smaller impact than in previous years, when versions of the bill made it an automatic conviction to drive with a THC blood level above the limit. Colorado lawmakers unanimously approve hemp legalization, from the Weed Blog. Senate Bill 241, a measure that would enable the state's Department of Agriculture to license farmers to cultivate hemp beginning this year, has passed out of the House Agriculture, Livestock, and Natural Resources Committee, as well as the House Appropriations Committee, both unanimously. In addition, the measure was approved through its second reading in the full House of Representatives. The bill now awaits one more House vote, where its expected passage will send it to the governor for final approval, given that it's already passed the Senate with a 34-1 vote. Under the proposal, farmers would have the option of applying for a 10-acre plot in order to study the viability of various hemp varieties, or they could apply for a larger full-scale hemp farm, one that wouldn't be limited by the number of plants, but rather by the THC content in said plants. Recent congressional research indicates that hemp market consists of over 25,000 various products. The same research found that America imports over $400 million worth of hemp from other countries. Colorado measure to halt marijuana sales dies, from the Denver Post. Marijuana advocates late Monday fought back an effort that could have halted Colorado's plans for legal marijuana shops. The proposal, Senate Concurrent Resolution 3, would have put two separate constitutional measures before the voters in November. The first would have asked voters to approve special sales and excise taxes on recreational marijuana. If that measure failed, a second measure would have asked voters whether they wanted to suspend recreational marijuana sales. Pot sales at specially licensed marijuana stores haven't even started yet, but they were authorized by Amendment 64, a marijuana legalization measure that voters passed just last year. The resolution introduced Monday would have suspended the sales until voters approved taxes to fund regulation of those stores. Activists say pot ruling raises the stakes for LA ballot measures, from the Los Angeles Times. A California Supreme Court ruling that cities have the authority to ban all medical marijuana dispensaries within their borders raises the stakes for a ballot measure battle over how Los Angeles should regulate the drug, backers of two measures said Monday. An attorney for one of the measures says if none of the ballot initiatives pass on May 21st, the city council may revive its previous efforts to ban dispensaries. Last year, the council voted to ban the city's estimated 700 medical pot shops. It later repealed the ban after a group of dispensary supporters collected enough signatures to put a measure on the ballot to overturn it. Proposition D's supporters include a group of older dispensaries, labor union employees who work at those dispensaries, and several council members. Attorney David Welch is representing Measure F, which would allow unlimited dispensaries so long as they meet certain requirements. Supporters of Proposition D say the prospect of more federal raids is a concern, but they said that by forcing the majority of the city's dispensaries to close, Proposition D would reduce the nuisance that has helped prompt federal action. St. Louis marijuana penalty reduction law goes into effect next month from stlouistoday.com. A new law reducing penalties for those caught in the city with small amounts of marijuana will go into force June 1st. The bill, which was championed by Alderman Shane Cohn, gives police officers the option to redistribute some marijuana cases to the municipal court system, essentially making it a civil infraction out of a municipal offense. Violators would typically be given a summons instead of handcuffed and put in the back of a police car. The penalty for the new ordinance would be a $100 to $500 fine. That's your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, May 7th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at actor Matthew Perry, honored by the Office of National Drug Control Policy for his advocacy of drug courts and the statistics behind those drug courts. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Is medical marijuana right for you? When you are stricken by an illness, injury, or disability, you deserve to live your life as free from pain and suffering as possible. Modern medical researchers have developed some amazing pharmaceutical drugs, but these may not be the best solution for you. At Alternative Medical Choices, we help collect your medical records history and provide a physician's review and examination to help you qualify for the use of medical marijuana in Oregon and Washington State. Call 971-270-0262 or visit altmedchoices.com for more information and to schedule an appointment today. Alternative Medical Choices, because you deserve the best in healthcare.
You still don't get it, do you? All right, let me make this as clear as I possibly can. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And I saw this one pop up in my news feed where Matthew Perry, this was from Hollywood Reporter, Matthew Perry honored at White House for drug court advocacy. And the point here, it goes on to point out how he had a lot of problems with prescription painkillers and alcohol. He basically was mixing, you know, oxys and booze or Vicodin and booze or whatever it was while he was part of the hit show Friends. After two trips to recovery, he's become a frequent public speaker on the perils of prescription drugs, national drug policy, and his own experience with recovery. 6 years ago, Perry met with West Huddleston, the head of the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, who inspired him to join the national movement advocating for alternative sentencing strategies that place nonviolent drug offenders in treatment programs rather than prison. That's topped off with his lovely quote from Matthew Perry, who says, quote, "Had I been arrested, I would be sitting in prison somewhere with a tattoo on my face. I'm very lucky that I never got arrested," end quote. You're also very lucky to be white and fairly rich. That helped a lot too there, Matt. Look, I got to tread, you know, carefully on this subject because, of course, we support people with severe drug addictions to prescription painkillers, to alcohol, to highly addictive illicit drugs, whatever it might be. If you've got a problem with those drugs, it's a public health problem. And we want to see people get treatment. We want to see people have a chance to turn their lives around. The problem is when we're talking about drug courts, we are largely talking about the use of drug courts for people that use marijuana. That's the primary way that we are seeing the use of drug courts in this country. And I have some statistics to show you here to back some of this up. Let me switch over to the video window here, and we'll just follow the old cursor. Drug courts sentence cannabis consumers to drug treatment they don't really need. I'm giving these sources from the FBI Uniform Crime Reports for marijuana arrests, the treatment episode data set for marijuana rehab, and the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, who we just mentioned, their source for how many drug courts there are. Now, if we start at the bottom of the chart here, in 1990 is about when we found, let's see if I can get that Pinterest thing to go away. There we go. All right, I have to keep my mouse off it. Okay, in 1990 is when drug courts began, and we had one drug court in 1990, 10 drug courts by 92. But as we reached the 2000s, in 2000, there were 665 drug courts. By 2008, we now have over 2,300 drug courts, and the most current data I have from 2011, over 2,700 drug courts. But the rise of those drug courts is correlated with a rise in marijuana arrests. Back in the 90s, there was only 300,000 or so marijuana arrests per year. And of course, now these days, we're in the 750,000 marijuana arrests. And that also correlates with how many people are going into marijuana rehab. Again, about 400,000 people in marijuana rehab. I'm sorry, about 1,000 people in, or I'm sorry, 400,000 people in marijuana rehab to over 700,000 in marijuana rehab today. Now, part of what is driving this drug court sentencing here, now, if we were talking about this with respect to meth or cocaine or other drugs, this might be a good thing, seeing more admissions. But what we are seeing with the drug courts is that we are actually just getting people who don't really need help with any problem with drugs. This is a graph of the sources of referral for drug treatment, again, taken from the treatment episode data set from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Data Archive. And I've broken it down in red for the source of being put in rehab by the criminal justice system. Either you got a court, drug court, DUI, something put you there. Yellow represents community referrals. That would be like a rehab provider, your school, your employer sent you to rehab. And then self-referrals in green. And what we find is that for people who are entered for cannabis only, let me click this so I can just get this. I can't get that any better. All right. For cannabis only, only 13% of the people in rehab who go there just for cannabis are going there because they sent themselves. Almost 60% are going there because a drug court or a criminal court forced them there. That is, for every one person who chooses drug rehab, four people are sent there by drug courts. And what's even more insidious about this, when we look further into the data, into the details, if we take a look at those people who are being sent to rehab for marijuana by the criminal justice system, only 1.2% of them are sent there for a DUI or DWI. Most of them, 44%, are there for violating probation or parole. They're back in rehab because they smoked a joint on probation or parole. State or federal court, that's just merely breaking marijuana laws in most cases that is leading people to a jail cell. So Matthew Perry, if you really want to do something about helping people with addictions, that's all well and good. But when we can see that for primary or secondary admission substances, while 21% of the people going to rehab are going there for marijuana, 37% of the marijuana users going there didn't even smoke pot in the 30 days prior to going to rehab. Now, the problem with all of this, Matthew Perry, is the fact that when these drug courts want to talk to the public and show how good a job they're doing, they often cite their statistics as to how many people don't reoffend, how many people are able to get through their probation or parole, how many people are able to pass their P-test. And when you're basing your statistics on a majority of people who are marijuana users that don't have a drug problem, it colors your statistics. It gives a bias to those statistics that don't show us the real impact of forcing people into rehab. You know, there's an old saying, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. The same thing goes for rehab. Forcing people to rehab doesn't work.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place. Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
That's right, it's Big Daddy spinning the stacks of wax all night long over at the Funky Roller Rink, baby. Come on by.
Music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, folks, time for the Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tune. We got Bacon Dan on the line. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, I'm doing quite good. How are you guys today?
Oh, fantastic. We had a little hash. Savior of the universe. So we're all right. But
nice.
Hey, I'm happy to bring you on here because I saw the name of the artist for today, DJ Schmoly. And I got to say that ever since the days of the old Seattle Supersonics, Detlef Schrempf, I've always been a big fan of guys with four consonants to begin their name. So with that segue, I turn it over to you.
Yeah, well, DJ Schmoly, first heard of him through Mashup Germany. Mashup movement in Europe is huge right now, and he's one of the best guys. You're going to notice this song. I mean, you're going to notice a lot of songs that you really know changed about in this. You're going to even hear a little bit of Stephen Hawking voice in it.
Great. Love the Stephen Hawking, one of the longest survivors of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. I saw a great little meme picture of him the other day talking about how he had a two-year diagnosis when he was diagnosed. He's lived 50 years since his diagnosis. So while his mind is devoted to everything about science, his body is rebelling against it. That's amazing.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always followed him closely because I lost my own stepfather to ALS.
Sure.
So it's, you know, it's amazing that Dr. Hawking is still with us. And as an owner of his books, I am very happy he's still with us.
All right. So our song for today, you mentioned you got it off of Germany mashup. So we got some kind of mashup. Do you know what the tunes are mashed here?
There's a whole bunch. I mean, there, sometimes it'll be just a 2-second clip. It's a really good mix up of a lot of good songs.
You know, we could make a contest out of it. Whoever can name all the songs in the mashup wins some free 420 Radio t-shirts.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, we'll have to do that next time because we're not ready for it right now. By the way, speaking of free swag, we got stickers coming out pretty soon to everyone. We just got to get the envelopes printed and mailed out, so stay tuned for that. Bacon Dan, thank you for calling in on this. Let's get to the tune. This is DJ Schmoly with Insomnia Rhythm Satisfaction.
Get no sleep. Rock and roll for a lot of years, and I've done it all. Now I do it without drugs. Hey, don't get me wrong, I still party with the best of them, but now I do it clean. You know, I'm on top of everything I do.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
We've got two new videos from our friends at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition I wanted to show you. Let's take a look at them now.
I'm Mike Masalinda. This week on Facing Florida, you'll meet a retired cop who's made his share of drug busts, but who now says drugs should be legal to make society a better place. Joining me now in a slightly more broad scope on all of this is Neil Franklin, who is the executive director of the Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You are a retired Maryland state trooper who believes drug policy needs to be reformed. Why?
Absolutely, Mike. Well, the organization Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is an international nonprofit organization of law enforcement professionals, and we're 10 years old, actually 11 years old this month, and we've been on the front lines of the war on drugs for decades, and we thought that we were going to be able to accomplish those initial goals of keeping drugs out of our communities, making drugs safer when they did happen to come under control of our young people. We thought we were going to be able to reduce crime, reduce addiction rates, and so on and so on. And we realize that none of those goals have not just been accomplished, in many cases they become worse, and our communities actually have become more dangerous.
Now you've commanded task forces, and yeah, you have put your fair share of people in prison.
Yeah, I did. I've put my fair share personally in prison because I worked undercover back in the late 70s and early 1980s.
So you really have been on this front line.
Oh, yeah, and I've also commanded numerous drug task forces. I had 9 at one time in the state of Maryland, had the entire eastern half of the state of Maryland.
So it was another undercover agent being assassinated by a drug dealer that made you start thinking.
Yeah. That's Corporal Ed Totley. He's a good friend of mine. He was working undercover for the Maryland State Police for about 14 years. As a matter of fact, I had never seen this young man in uniform until the day that we buried him. That very year after I retired and went to work for the Baltimore Police Department, he was working a case with the FBI down in Washington, D.C. on another task force. and he was buying cocaine from the mid-level drug dealer. Because of the money that can be made so easily in this business, illicit trade, this drug dealer at this time decided this was the time that he was going to keep both the drugs and the money.
So when you say reform, is that decriminalized? Is it legalized? What is that?
It is legalization. It is regulation and control. It is bringing these drugs underneath of the law, because currently they're outside of the law.
And certainly there's money to be made by governments if they were to do that, but it seems to me that if there's no profit motive, if a drug addict can buy cocaine or heroin, we know who they are, we can treat them, we can also keep them from hitting me over the head.
Right. This issue of managing drugs in our community is a health issue, and that's where it should be centered, not in criminal justice where it is today. It's become very profitable for our organized crime networks, neighborhood gangs, the cartel south of our border. It's a big issue related directly to immigration problems that we're having. We are putting over $320 billion into the hands of criminals globally every year because of
Wow.
the drug trade. And we need to end that, and we can end that. Now, don't get me wrong. We know that career criminals, yeah, they'll find something else to do. But the vast majority of people who are in the illegal drug business today are mere opportunists, because so much money can be made with doing so little work.
It's much like what happened with prohibition and alcohol to drugs. And as we were talking beforehand, you mentioned no one's having gun battles over cigarettes, but we're making progress in the
use. Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because tobacco use, nicotine, is one of the most addictive drugs known to man. But yet we've been able to reduce consumption in this country over the past couple of decades. We almost cut it in half. We've sent no one to prison, and we're not having drive-by shootings and running gun battles in our streets, you know, to make that happen. Education and treatment is the way to go. We already know, the government already knows, that we are much more effective in reducing drug abuse in our communities through viable treatment programs.
But how do you get politicians to go along? And we've only got 30 seconds.
That's another issue. By educating the people, their constituents. When they understand what the problem is and what needs to be done, then they lead their representatives. And that's what happens. When representatives see that's where the people want to go, then that's where they go.
Neil Franklin, thanks so much for being here and sharing in the not mainstream, but perhaps someday in our lifetime, a position that may come about.
Mike,
thank you so much
for having
here.
Me, Mike.
Recreational drugs are undoubtedly an international problem that very few countries, and unfortunately we'd have to include New Zealand here, are making any headway with.
It's prompted a bunch of US celebrities to turn the just say no philosophy on its head. They reckon maybe saying yes could be a much smarter idea.
They think locking up users in the war on drugs isn't achieving much at all. Here's Craig Stanaway.
Celebrities and drugs aren't usually the best mix.
I am on a drug, it's called Charlie Sheen.
This week though, the likes of Kim Kardashian, Will Smith, Scarlett Johansson and Richard Branson, amongst others, have harnessed their power for good or evil, depending on how you see things. They've asked President Obama to rethink the so-called war on drugs and stop locking up so many people for minor drug offences. Here in New Zealand, calls for softer drug laws have a habit of falling on deaf ears.
There's not a single solitary chance that, as long as I'm the Minister of Justice, we'll be relaxing drug laws in New Zealand.
But the ball does seem to be rolling, albeit fairly slowly. Portugal's drug abuse rates have halved since decriminalising all personal use in 2001. Two American states have legalised some cannabis use. Others are set to follow, and New Zealand is leading the way with its approach to regulating legal highs like this.
It's really about giving an assurance to the users, to their parents in many cases, and to the wider community that the products that are available are safe.
So we're regulating synthetic cannabis, but maintaining a hard line against the real stuff.
80% of crimes are alcohol and drug related. So if the police target dealers in particular, then that's going to have an impact on the overall crime statistics.
With half of all adult New Zealanders having puffed the herb at some point, and minor drug convictions costing us around $60 million a year, it's likely the call for change is only going to get louder.
But there is an organisation in the US called LEAP. It stands for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. It wants to go a lot further.
Yeah, they say drugs need to be legalised and regulated. I spoke to the vice chair of LEAP, Peter Crist, and asked him how doing that would in any way help the drug problem.
Legalizing drugs is not about solving the drug problem. Legalizing drugs is about shutting down the underground marketplace that the terrorists and gangsters are financing themselves off of. And dealing with the drug problem is an educational and a healthcare problem, and stop that creating an underground marketplace for this. We tried this with alcohol between 1920 and 1933. And we found out that alcohol did not create people like Al Capone. Prohibition of alcohol is what created people like Al Capone. And in 1933, we decided to legalize alcohol. That didn't solve our drinking problem, but it put a big dent in our crime and violence problem. What we have to do is get the gangsters, thugs, and terrorists out of this industry, deal with this as a healthcare and an educational problem, and move on.
Critics, though, say if you take away the illegality of drugs, that's going to turn would-be drug users into rampant drug users.
First off, I want to say that anybody who isn't using drugs in your society or our society today is not using those drugs because they can't get them. I'm sure drugs are just as available in every city in New Zealand as they are in every city in America. And the fear that everybody will become a drug addict was exactly the fear that people tried to sell us when they said that we shouldn't legalize alcohol in the early 1930s. They said everybody will become a drunk and it'll destroy society. And that's exactly what happened. We legalized alcohol and everybody became a drunk and we lost World War II and we're all speaking. Of course that didn't happen. What happened is people responsibly use this drug. Some people don't use it at all. Some people use it recklessly and irresponsibly. But the vast majority of the people that use alcohol use it responsibly.
So what you're saying is this is about turning drugs into a case of supply and demand.
When you're talking about consensual adult behavior, when you're talking about things that consenting adults want to do with each other, I want to sell you drugs, you want to buy my drugs. When you make that behavior illegal in a society, you create crime. And if there is money connected to that activity in society, then you also create violence. And we are saying at LEAP, that we are not about the drugs. Don't use any of them. They're all terrible. Be as drug-free as you can be. But to use prohibition to deal with this drug problem is contrary to what we're trying to accomplish.
Now, we've touched on, obviously, drugs and alcohol. What about cigarettes? Some people say just banning cigarettes would end that problem altogether.
We, in the last 10 years, have gotten 50% of the adult cigarette smokers to give up smoking cigarettes. And how do we do that? Well, we went around and we burned all the tobacco fields and we locked up all the tobacco sellers. No, that ain't what we did. What we did was we educated the people and we made it a little bit less convenient to smoke. You know, you got to go outside, you can't sit in the bar and smoke anymore. And 50% of our adult cigarette smokers have given up tobacco. We haven't had that success rate with any illegal drug anywhere.
Yeah, he talks really well and he's quite convincing.
Very.
And we brought this up on Facebook today and it's really controversial, right? People have got a lot to say on this particular issue. Let me throw this one at you, Greg, because you know his arguments probably better than we do. Tennille says that the thought of legalising pee makes her shudder. And you would get that, right? With all the crime and violence that pee causes.
Absolutely.
Why, how could we do it?
But the point Peter made right at the beginning is you get rid of the people who are making pee now, who across the board are criminals because it's illegal, and you make it regulated and you decriminalise it. You take that element away from it. You're going to make it, you know, you're not going to see the people who are making money out of them. It's going to be regulated. But you also, like he said, you're not going to see the whole world go, oh, pee, it's legal, I'll give it a try. It's just, he made a really good point, which we weren't able to use in the interview, but about the prisons in America. 4,500 prisons in America, 2.2 million inmates, not one of them is drug free. And his point is, if you can't make that environment drug free, which is so locked down, you're just not going to do it out in the wider society.
Some of the most secure prisons in the world.
Absolutely.
Stephen Rorton says legalising all drugs will increase the rate of use and abuse because it's more readily available and therefore everybody will try it, or the, sends the message to the drug users.
I don't understand what he's saying.
I don't understand. No, I don't understand.
No. Peter was saying, like, no one is not taking drugs because they're illegal, but I think there'd be people who would be more likely to give them a try if they weren't illegal.
I think at the hard end of things, what we're talking about, you know, heroin, pee, cocaine, no one's going to go, oh, I've always wanted to give it a bash. I don't think
that. When my daughter turns 18, she says, well, am I going to try cannabis? Well, the government says it's okay.
But that's the point he made as well.
Earlier than that, Jesse, just
no,
saying.
But as he said right at the beginning, we're not saying drugs are good, drugs are bad, but there needs to be education. They are bad, like cigarettes. People give up because they know they're bad and it's out.
And in Craig Stanaway's story that we ran right at the top, you will have heard of the example of Portugal. It is, once they took the criminality away from cannabis, they were able to use education and health issues.
Exactly.
Well, it feels wrong to me, but you've heard the arguments. We want to hear if you're convinced. We're asking, do you think New Zealand should legalise all drugs, like Peter Crist was suggesting? You can vote at 7sharp.co.nz on Facebook, or you can text us. Just text A or B. Just text the letters to 8875 and we'll bring you the results a little bit later on in the show.
Welcome back. Let's have a look now at the results of our poll we launched earlier. We're asking, do you think New Zealand should legalise all drugs?
Oh.
66% of you through a fug of cannabis have said yes. 34%. Now, that's interesting. This, of course, on the back of the Leap interview we did before with a group in America.
So. He made a very good argument.
He made a very strong argument.
Maybe a particular special interest group were answering that poll more than others. If so, well-motivated cannabis team.
Yeah, see, that's because we're all so unmotivated slacker losers, right? Even in New Zealand, they get the stereotypical reactions. They put out a poll, should we legalize all drugs? 66% say yes, and, well, of course, it must be because we're stoned through a fog of cannabis, or maybe pee. Pee is methamphetamine in New Zealand, by the way. Not what you were thinking. Oh, well. Speaking of reefer madness, when we come back, we got time for a radical rant. Kevin Sabet's got three statements. I got plenty more in rebuttal, so stay tuned.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Yar! Thar be pirates here! Arr.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, the old webpage out there at learnaboutsam.com, a.k.a. Project Sam, had been quiet for a little while. I hadn't had anything to parody or satire. But as there have been a couple of developments over the past few days, it looks like Kevin Sabet's had some time to update the pages, and that means I've got to update some rants. First of all, Kevin came back to let us know how happy he was about the California Supreme Court ruling that cities can inconvenience sick people. Or in other words, they can zone dispensaries out of existence. They can actually create zoning regulations that make it so users of one and only one medicine can't get their medicine in town. So anyway, I wanted to bring up something on this because he's got this quote, and Tom Angel from Marijuana Majority brought this up on Facebook the other day. And I've asked myself the same question. Let me give you the quote from Kevin Sabet first. This is his quote. Though we all want the sick and dying. Oh, wait a minute. Let me make sure I'm I'm on my page. I better go to the actual Sam page. I'll be reading. I want to be accurate here for his quote. So can't give you my satirical take on it. But let me get the quote here from, here we go, the Sam statement on California Supreme Court can ban pot shops. Here he goes. Though we all want the sick and dying. All right. So he's not the best writer. Though we all want the sick and dying access to medications to ease their suffering, research has found that the average California medical marijuana cardholder is a 32-year-old white male with no history of debilitating illness. And that's always kind of made me scratch my head a little bit. So what? 32-year-old white males don't get epilepsy? 32-year-old white males don't get Crohn's disease or, you know, intractable pain or severe nausea or post-traumatic stress or anxiety? I mean, 32-year-old white males are supposed to be perfectly healthy? Is that what I'm getting here? And what difference does it make if they're white? Why is that part of the propaganda? So because of this statement from Kevin Sabet, I decided to look up the statistics because, you know me, I look shit up. And I found some interesting stuff. I went to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, and you can get there as well. If you really want to learn how to do this stuff, send me an email. I'll send you the instructions. But I went to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, 2002 through 2009 RDAS. Ooh, what that means is they took the data from 8 years straight, 2002 through 2009, they put it all together, and they extracted very detailed information about the nation's drug use habits. So I decided, you know, he keeps saying, you know, the average medical marijuana patient in California is a 32-year-old white male. All right. So I took a look and I wondered, what is the average age of a pot smoker in the first place? So let me show you. I'm going to switch cameras here and I'll give you a look at the chart. And this is available, by the way, on my Pinterest account. You can go to pinterest.com/radicalrust. So I took a look at the percentage of U.S. marijuana consumers by age group, breaking it down, starting at age 12. And working our way all the way up to age 65. Now, the reason I had to limit it to age 65, if you pick data for which there are very few values, it returns an error because there's a certain privacy regulation. So like if it came up and said, you know, there was 6 99-year-olds who were smoking pot, that would violate their privacy. You could figure out who the six were, right? So anyway, you can't get much past the age 65, but it's pretty low past age 65 anyway. And the color coding here is such. The light green represents the percentage of people in that age group who use marijuana at least once this year. And then the dark green is the percentage of people in that age group who use marijuana monthly. So as we look at it, starting at age 12, you know, very, very, very few, you know, less than a percent, maybe 1% of 12-year-olds are using marijuana annually. But this scale goes all the way up to 35%. And this peak right here where I've got the number one is the representation of 19 and 20-year-olds. Yeah, that's right, folks. If you're looking at that right, about one out of three 19 and 20-year-olds are smoking pot this year. If we include the 18 and 21-year-olds, let's just make it 18 to 21, it's still about 32% of 18 to 21-year-olds are smoking pot this year. Take a look at that at a monthly rate. It's very similar scale. 18 to 21-year-olds, about 18.5%, almost one out of five, 18 to 21-year-olds are smoking pot every month. And then I've also, and let me give you a look at the scale here. You know, when this peak of about 33% declines very rapidly to this point in blue where you hit the 32-year-old white male that Kevin Sabet keeps talking about and continues to decline and decline and decline into the 60s. Now, there's another point that I've illustrated here. Point three, this is the point where the median of pot smokers is. Now, if you don't remember your high school math, median is the middle point. From this line on down is half of them, and from this line up is half of them. In fact, it's not an accurate median because 52% of marijuana smokers are under the age of 27. 52%. The median's like 26.8 or something, 26.6, something like that. So if you're under the age of 27, you're in the majority of all pot smokers, annual or monthly. It's about 52% for both measurements. And then I also took a look at the average age of all pot smokers. We add up all these pot smokers. And again, to be fair, I'm not including pot smokers under the age of 12 or over the age of 65. So the numbers may differ slightly. But the average age of a pot smoker, illustrated by 0.4, is 29 years old. So if Kevin Sabet keeps claiming that the average medical marijuana patient in California is a 32-year-old white male, and if the goal is to reduce youth marijuana smoking, isn't this progress? The average California medical marijuana patient is 3 years older than the average U.S. marijuana smoker. Isn't this progress? But then again, I have a tendency to think logically, so who knows? There was another point that Kevin brought up having to do with... let's see if I can find this. Oh, yes. Once again, he makes the point that less than 2% of California cardholders have HIV, AIDS, cancer, or glaucoma. Less than 2%. You know, the only ailments for which we should have any sympathy for someone using a non-toxic herb. You know, not like those drug-seeking fakers who claim to be using pot for such minor complaints as epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, post-traumatic stress disorder, neuropathic pain, migraines, endometriosis, arthritis, hyperemesis, or Alzheimer's agitation. You know, those fakers. And, of course, he goes on. This is another point that he makes here. And by the way, there's two other statements he had on Obama saying no to legalization and the Temple University study on THC for HIV. I'm going to have to save those for hour two because this one was just so full of ranty goodness. I had to go with it. He seriously made a point here in his statement. Let's see if I can find this. Real medical marijuana would focus on non-smoked applications of the drug dispensed by pharmacies under the supervision of physicians. You know, patentable pharmaceutical drugs at a 25,000% markup under the supervision of physicians. Not self-described pot docs that sell recommendations for super silver haze for $100 a pop to anyone with a headache. I love it when he comes back with the names of strains as if they're so silly, you know, compared to the serious pharmaceutical medications like Asafex, Cialis, Tadalafil, Lunesta, Boniva, Vagisil, Anusol, Insivec, Adcetris, Yervoy, Vibrid, Zydiga and Xgeva for $200 an office visit to anybody who has seen an Ask Your Doctor About commercial. Talking about silly names for medicines. At least I can spell Super Silver Haze. So that's the Kevin Sabet stat. If you want the full rant and the graphs to this, I have them available at smartapproaches.com. Anytime Kevin Sabet releases a statement through Project Sam, anytime Project Sam is in the news, I will be there at smartapproaches.com, satirizing it and bringing you the real data, the real science behind what they're talking about to show just how full of it they are, how desperate they are to maintain their hold on the pharmaceutical industry, the rehab industry, to continue that flow of good, obedient, hardworking marijuana consumers into the private prison slave labor industry, to keep them moving in to the rehab industries, to boost up the statistics of drug courts, to boost up the statistics of rehab, to keep getting money to the P-test industry. I'll be there like an old R&B song, baby. That's all the time we got for hour one. More rants coming up in hour two, plus some special anti-drug videos. We're gonna have fun with this one. PB Herman tells you not to do crack. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.